Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Pei Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top of Daf Pei Aleph. You'll notice in the Gemara text a couple of different markings. A double underline appears and a trapezoid or volcano shape appears. Alongside the Gemara text, you'll notice a long marking, Huna. What happens in the next few lines is Huna Bar Bar Maremar raises a seeming contradiction between two Tanaic sources and then provides an answer. So the words Rami, meaning raising a contradiction, like the word Veraminu, if you're familiar, and Mishani means any answers, that will appear a few lines later, are highlighted with the double underline, and the Tanaic sources are featured, the contradictory or appearing seemingly contradictory sources highlighted with the volcano shapes. So now the Gemara, Huna Mar Bar Maremar Kamei Deravina Romi Masnisin Ahadodi Umishani. Huna, in the presence of Ravina, raised a contradiction in Tanaic sources and resolved it. Tanan, on the one hand, it says, V'kulon Shamru, all the hired workers, craftsmen that say, Tul es shelcha v'have mois, take your item back and pay me. Shomer chinam, he becomes now, his status changes into that of a shomer chinam, and he is no longer a shomer sachar. Up till now, while he had the item, your item that he was working on, and was going to get money in exchange for his efforts, he was considered a shomer socher, a paid bailey, that has a higher level of responsibility than a shomer chinam. But now, when he finishes his work, and he tells you, take it, and then pay me, his status drops down, his level of obligation drops down to that of a shomer chinam, an unpaid bailey. V'hu hadin l'gemartiv, the same would apply if he announces, I finished it. V'raminu. And we raise now a seeming contradictory Tanaic source. Omar lo shoyel, a borrower says, someone interested in borrowing an item, and he says, shlach, send it. Send it to me. V'sholchan, the owner, sends it. Umesa, and in the case of an animal that he wanted to borrow, and it died. Chayov, the borrower is obligated to compensate for it. V'chein b'shoa shemachzira, and likewise at the time that he is returning it. Now we want to emphasize the main point. We're saying that this shoel, the borrower, maintains his original high level of responsibility. A shoel bears responsibility in the cases of geneva, aveda, ones, whether it's theft or loss, or even loss due to circumstances beyond his control. His status does not change even though the borrowing period ended. Now, compare this point to the point mentioned just before regarding the uman, the craftsman, where we'll call it the craftsman period ended, where he says, I finished it. What happened at that point? His original level of responsibility dropped from a shomer sochar status down to a shomer chinam status. In the case of a shoel, which is another one of the dalet shomrim, we see that at the end of the period, his status does not change. It remains as it was originally. Umeshani, and now we resolve. That is, Huna Mar Bar Maremar says, Omar Rafron Bar Popom Rav Chisda, Lo Shanu, that which it says that the Shoel retains his original high level responsibility, where he returns the item in the middle of the borrowing period. If he borrowed it for 30 days and decides to return the item within the 30 day period, so his original Shoel status remains. But after the borrowing period is over, then he is potter. Potter means he is exempt. Now, what do we mean by exempt? That's the subject of the next section of Gemara. Before we continue, let us glance at the side in our margin where you see the Nosei, the topic heading, which reads, Shoel she'avru yemei she'losai, a borrower whose borrowing period finished, eino chayov olov k'shoel, elo potter. He no longer bears responsibility as a borrower, rather, he's exempt. Hagemor mevaras haim upoter milois shoel, aval chayav kishomer socher, or afilu kishomer socher, eino chayav. Is he exempt from being a shoel, but he retains a certain level of responsibility, that of a paid bailey, which would mean that in the case of theft or loss, he would have to bear responsibility. Or do we say that even that he is no longer considered? Now the Gemara, Ibai Aloho, Potter, the term Potter that was just referred to in the Gemara, Mishoel v'chayav keshomer socher, does it mean he is exempt from Shoel status, but he does bear responsibility regarding the item as a shomer socher? Oidilma shomer socher nami lo have. Or do we say he is not even a shomer socher? Omar Amemar, Mistabra Potter Mishoel V'chayav Keshemer Socher. Amemar suggests that it's most likely, Savora wise, logically speaking, like the first possibility, like the Aleph possibility, that he is exempt from the high level responsibility borne by a Shoel, but he does bear responsibility as a Shemer Socher. And what's the logic? Hayil V'nehene Mehane Havi. Since he benefited so much as a borrower basically gets exclusive, he receives exclusive benefit without paying anything whatsoever, just as the term borrowing implies. So since he was a nene, a borrower, a beneficiary, without any expense on his part, he will now in turn provide you, the owner, with benefit. And what do we mean by that? As a Shomer Socher, he's willing to accept upon himself Shomer Socher status, even though the Shoel period has ended. And we just to repeat, since he received benefit, he's willing to provide benefit. Tanyo Kavose de Amemar. We have a Tanaic source that supports Amemar, supports the principle of Hayo Venehne Mehane. We're going to quote a source that deals with someone who is receiving items from a shop, a craftsman, in order to send them to his father-in-law. Father-in-law in anticipation of a marriage that is going to be consummated. Halokeach kelim mibeis chomer l'shagron lebeis chomer. A person, we'll call him the son-in-law, takes vessels from a craftsman with the intention of sending them as gifts to his father-in-law. Rashi says l'shag lebeis chomer savloinos larusoso. Their savlonos are gifts larusoso to his betrothed wife. We speak about an arusa, that's the first stage of marriage in anticipation of eventual nisuin, the consummation of the marriage. So we're dealing with the early stage of marriage, and he's interested in sending them to his, we'll call her his wife, the Omar Lo. And the husband says to the craftsman, if they accept these as gifts, I will then pay you their cost. If they don't accept them, if they decide to send them back, Ani noisein loch lefi teivas hanosher ben. I will pay you a fee that isn't exactly the cost of the item itself, but it's a teivas hanoh fee. What do we mean by teivas hanoh? That's the value that this son-in-law received by the family's seeing that he was interested in sending them a gift. Even if they didn't actually accept it, they feel a sense of gratitude and maybe obligation toward this son-in-law, i.e. husband. So that amount, that value, is called Toivas Hanoh. And what happened? V'ne'ensu. And the vessel became destroyed because of circumstances beyond his control. When did they become destroyed? Well, it depends. Behalicha, if en route to the family, Hayav, then he bears responsibility, he must compensate for their loss. Rashi says, Chayav, right across from here in the Rashi, V'nansu balicha chayav, da'il v'kotzatz deman, since a price had been fixed for those items, u'moshchon l'shem l'kicha, and this husband, customer, drew them for purchase purposes, harehem l'kuchim biyodo, they are considered purchased by him, ad she'eda she'eno l'kucha, until it is revealed that they don't want to receive it. But up till that point, it's as if he purchased it. Likewise, we say in Maseches Bava Basra, in the chapter named Hamoichres Asfina, Omar Shmuel lokeach kli mina uman al manas levakroi, v'im ein boi mum yikochenu, v'nenas biyodo chayav, v'u dekitzi domea. There, Shmuel speaks about someone investigating a vessel, scrutinizing an item, and if it is found to be blemish-free, a perfect item, he will buy it. And it slipped out of his hand, beyond his control, he will have to pay for it. So we continue in the Gemara. Another possibility is that it became destroyed b'chazira. B'chazira is chazora, like in return. Namely, the family did not want to accept it. So Potter, the customer's son-in-law, is exempt from oinsim. Why? Well, because he is viewed as a shomer socher at this point, and a shomer socher, a paid bailey, is exempt from destruction resulting from circumstances beyond one's control. However, he does bear responsibility as a shomer socher. We say poter mipnei shehu kenosei socher. The source concludes by saying he's exempt from onsim because he is like a shomer socher. But now, why is he responsible as a shomer socher? A shomer socher means someone paid to care to watch an item. Where was this son-in-law ever paid for it? The answer is, since he benefited by attempting to give it as a gift initially, and thereby ingratiated himself to the family, he is now willing to provide. He got that pleasure out of the vessel, pleasure from the craftsman, from the Uman. So in return for receiving that benefit, he, the son-in-law, or husband, is willing to grant a benefit to the Uman by serving as a Shomer Sochar. That point of Hayol the Nene Mihane is the point that Amemar made earlier, and hence this Tanaic source serves as a support to that. And now, as we continue in the Gemara, another long marking appears. We call this a Maisen incident. Hahu Gavro Dezovin Le Chamro Le Chavre, who was a person that purchased a wine for his friend. Omar Le Ka Mamtino Le Leduchta Ploni. He says, I'm going to bring it, I'm going to transport it to such and such a place. An alternative translation to this case might be that the person sold a donkey to his friend. Omar Lay, the we're going over the line that we read already, but we want to clarify that the speaker here is the purchaser. The purchaser said to the seller, "Komamtino le leduch diploni. I'm taking this item to such and such a place. E mizdavno mutav. If I'm successful in selling it, then great. Ve'ilo, and if not, mahadarno le mihalech. I will then return it to you. Ozal velo izdavno. So the purchaser went and was unsuccessful in selling it there. Ubahadi deka asa, and on his way back, on his return trip, isnes from the word ones, the item that he had acquired was destroyed because of circumstances beyond his control. Asa lekame de Rav Nachmon. So the case came to Rav Nachmon. Is he obligated to compensate for the loss that was a result of ones or not? Chayve. And Rav Nachmon obligated him. Esve Rova l'Rav Nachmon. Rova raises a question to Rav Nachmon. Nansu behalicha chayav ubechazara poter v'tneishu kenosei sachar. This is what we saw earlier, that if the ones transpired on the return trip, there is exemption from ones. Why? Because his status drops down to that of a shomer sochar. Omar Lei, so Rav Nachmon responds, you can't compare this particular case with the purchaser to the story before in the Tanaic source with the husband sending gifts to his wife, because Omar Le Chazora Dehai, the return trip of this customer who bought the Chamra, Halicha He. His return trip is like his initial trip to the above-mentioned destination. What was the above-mentioned Duch de Ploni that reference was made to? I'm on my way to such and such a place in order to sell it there. That's the point. He was on his way to sell it there. On his way back, if he would find someone to buy the Chamra from him, would he not have sold it? So the Gemara explains, my time, why do you say that the return trip of this purchaser of the Chamra is like his initial trip to the aforementioned destination? Savarahu, it's a matter of logic. Bechaziroso, on his return trip. Fine, he was unsuccessful in selling it in the place that he thought he might be able to sell it. On his return, Ilu Ashkach Lizvune, if he would find someone unto whom to sell it, Mi Lo Zavna, would he not in fact sell it? So the entire journey, whether the going to or coming back from, is considered one halicha, one journey. Because during the entire period of time, he is anticipating finding someone to sell it to. And therefore, he retains his high level of responsibility till he actually delivers the unsold item back to the hands of the original owner. Before we go further, we glance at the side of the Gemara under our Nosewar topic heading. HaGemara Tazbir, the Gemara will explain, Lama Shmor Li Ve'eshmor Lach Chayav Kishomer Socher. Why, when an arrangement is made between two people, where one says to the other, watch an item for me, and I will watch for you, why is he termed or viewed as a Shomer Socher? As a paid Bailey, velo amrinon, and we don't say Dave Shmira Bebailim de Potter, that we would classify this arrangement under the general heading of Shmira Bebailim, which would result in exemption. Now, what is Shmira Bebailim? It's a new expression for many of us. Based on psukim in the Torah, where the owner of an item is in service of the one who, let us say, borrows an item, or one who is hired to watch an item, and the owner of that very item is working for either the shoel, the borrower, or for the shomer, if something should happen to the item, the shomer is not held responsible. Why? Because the original owner was in the picture at the beginning of the relationship, the beginning of the either the borrower or the shomer engagement. That is called Shmira Bebailim. And I know we're repetitive here, but that phenomenon or that association results in exemption on the part of the one who either borrows or is serving as a shomer. Now we turn to the Gemara. Shmor li ve'eshmor loch shomer sochar. Now the initial thinking is that these people are working together. In other words, I'll watch your item while you watch my item. The Mishnah rules shomer sochar that he has the status of a shomer sochar, which would mean that if the item is stolen, so he has to compensate. Ve'amai. Why do we say he is a shomer socher and not exempt? Shmira Bebailim, he is it not Shmira Bebailim? Namely, when Mr. A says to Mr. B, you, Mr. B, watch my item, and I will be in your service by watching your item. So Mr. A, in turning to Mr. B, seeking out Mr. B as a shomer, Mr. A is suggesting that he will, at the same time, watch Mr. B's item. So Mr. A, the owner of that item, being watched by Mr. B, is in service of Mr. B. So why is Mr. B, in our example, considered Shomer Sochar, when the owner of the item that Mr. B is watching is in service of that Mr. B? Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa explains, what is the Mishnah talking about? The Omar Le, Shmor Li Hayom, Mr. A turns to Mr. B, you watch my item today. Veshmor Loch Lemochar, and I will watch your item tomorrow. So that when Mr. B starts watching Mr. A is not engaged in the service of Mr. B. Mr. A's engagement takes place only the next day. So you don't have the phenomenon of Shmira Bebailim. Tanu Rabbanan, Shmor li veshmoloch, Hashileni vashilcha, Shmor li vashiloch, Hashileni veshmoloch. Four different arrangements, which we'll go over. Kula nasu shomrei sochar ze loze. We have the case of Shmor li ve'eshmoloch, the first case, which we just described. You watch for me and I'll watch for you. The second case, hashileni, means loan me an item, and I will loan an item to you. Shmor li, you watch for me, and I will loan something to you. And the fourth case, loan something to me, ve'eshmoloch, and I will watch your thing. In all of the cases, they become a shomer sochar ze lo ze. Let's take a look at Rashi momentarily. On the second line under the Gemara text, Hashileni v'ashiloch, Ein ze shoyel lizchayev bo'intzin. he's not considered a shoel, a borrower, to rise to the level of responsibility where he would be guilty even in ones. Why is he not? Is he not saying, loan me your item? Why, after saying, loan me your item, are we saying he's not considered a shoel? She'ein kol hanoa shelo, she'af hu mashilo. We don't say that he is an exclusive beneficiary, because at the same time, he is loaning an item to the other fellow. Now, having read these cases, the Gemara now goes on to say, why do you say that they are all a shomer socher zeh lo zeh? V'amai shmiro bebailim hi. We just discussed that a moment before. If I'm watching an item for you, and then you're going to be watching an item for me, so while you are watching an item for me, I am watching your item. I'm in your service. So why is there not the exemption of Shmira Bevailim? Omar Rav Papa, the Omar Lay, as we just answered before, Shmor Li Hayom, Ve'eshmor Loch Lamochar. The arrangement was not one of Shmira Bevailim, because the first party says, you watch for me today, and I will be in your service, but that's only tomorrow. A new marking appears, with also a long marking on the side of the Gemara text, with Roman numerals 1 and 2. Take note first of the length of this long marking. It takes you down to the fourth line from the top on Omid Beis. The triangle that you see, you have one here, and you'll see another one on Omid Beis, the fourth line from the top, on the side under our Mivneh, our structural note, Mikrim Akshurim Liftur Bebailim, cases that are related to the exemption that we've been discussing just now, the Bebailim, where the owner of the item is in your service. Different concepts that will be presented in the Gemara. Number one, Pshia Bebailim, where there's an act of negligence, of irresponsibility, on the part of the shomer, though the owner is in his service, in service of that shomer. So generally speaking, pshia results in culpability. Does the fact that the owner is in service, working for the shomer, does that serve as an exemption for the otherwise guilty pshia responsibility? Two, shmira bevailim. Number three, she'ela bevailim. We touched on that, we made an allusion to that in the cases we just featured of one borrowing an item, and the borrower benefits from service provided to him by the owner of the item. We have Roman numerals number 1 and 2, Shnei Girsois B'mais Dano Aloi. We'll see the first triangle highlights Hano Aloi, a case involving people that were spice merchants, and there will be two versions of that particular story. The crown shape that appears in the Gemara highlights, we'll say, the key words, Pshia and Shmira. Roman numeral number 1, Lefi Hamanda Omar de Pshia Bebailim Potter. The first version will highlight the opinion that even an act of recklessness, but if the owner is present, is in service of the shomer, there is exemption. Roman number 2, Lamadar Mabdipshia Babailim Chayav, according to the opinion that once it's an act of pshia, the fact that the owner is serving the shomer at the initial borrowing or the initial engagement time does not serve as an exemption, that is chayav. So there's a second version of the story involving the spice merchants that we'll see in the Gemara. Virak shmira bebailim potter, the ptur bebailim lokelu parshas shemer chinam. The concept of bailim in your service does not include the section of the Torah that deals with Shomer Chinam. When we speak about different levels of responsibility, we're working with the, we'll say, the format of the Torah that features three parshios, three sections, the first dealing with an unpaid Beili Shomer Chinam, the second parsha, I should say, Shomer Chinam is followed by Shomer Zohar, and the third parsha referred to in Sefer Shmos is the parsha dealing with the Shoel, the borrower. The concept of Bailim, the owner in service of the Shomer, that concept appears in the terms of the written law, in terms of the Chumash, the Torah. The Torah Shebiksav appears in the context of Shoel, of a borrower. Where in proximity is the Shomer Chinam? Well, it's two parshios beforehand. So the point we just made, that the concept of Bebailim, the exemption, the ptur of Bebailim, whereby a borrower will not be obligated, even in the case of Oines, that exemption may extend, may be included in one, the parsha that immediately precedes it, the Shomer Sochar section, but the exemption of Bebailim doesn't, we'll say, jump back to include two parshios earlier, to include the Shomer Chinam. The Shomer Chinam in general is exempt anyway for Genev and Aveda, for theft and loss, but he is obligated to compensate in the case of recklessness, of irresponsibility, which we call Pshia. The exemption of Bebailim doesn't extend back from the Parsha of Shoel all the way back to include the Parsha of Shomer Chinam. For many of you, it might be beneficial to actually open up the Chumash and view the Psukim at the source and see how the Torah speaks about Be'olav Imoy, the owner is with the with the Shomer in the case of Shoel, and there's a separate section in Parshas Mishpatim that deals with the Shoel, which is preceded by the Shomer Sochar, and in turn preceded by the Shomer Chinam. I cannot say that when you look at the Chumash itself, the terms Shomer Chinam and Shomer Sochar will appear, because they do not appear, but nevertheless, through the oral tradition, that is what we conclude, that the first section deals with Shomer Chinam, the second section deals with Shomer Sochar, and the third referred to section refers to Shoel. We continue now in the Gemara itself. Hano Aloi, we're at the triangle with the shaded in top tip. Hano Aloi, these Aloi. Aloi are spice merchants. The Chalyema have a ofi lo chad minayu. Every day, one would be responsible for the baking of the bread for the others. There was a rotation system that these spice merchants had worked out amongst themselves. Hahu yuma, one day, omru le lechad minayu. They turned to one of them and said, zil ofilon, go and bake for us. Now the Rashi says, zil ofi, the ofilon, kasal kadeitach yoima dide have. The thinking at this point is that it was his assigned day. Dahashta lo havu inhu b'shmiras talisai ela hashemer kishemer chinam. As a result of it being his day to work anyway, he is not providing them with any special benefit. They in turn, they will be watching his garment. They are viewed as Shomrei Chinam. They're not getting any benefit. They're not getting paid for it. V'itzrich l'meimar poshu ba, and as a result of their being classified as Shomrei Chinam, the only possibility of finding them culpable if something happens to the talis, to this man's talis that they're watching, would be if they are posea, they are reckless. Dilo lo mechayvi, otherwise they wouldn't be obligated. That's by way of background. So now we turn back to the Gemara. We have these spice merchants who had a rotation amongst themselves, each one baking for the others their daily bread. They turned to one of them and said, go bake for us. Omar Lahu, and he said to them, Natru li glimoi, watch for me, my glimo, my garment. Adaasa poshu bov ignuv. By the time he came to recover his garment, they were reckless, and through their recklessness, it was stolen. So it's not a case of standard theft, but it's theft as a result of recklessness. Asu lekame de Rav Papa chayvinu. The case came to Rav Papa, and he obligated them to compensate. Omru le Rabbona le Rav Papa. The other scholars asked Rav Papa concerning his ruling, Amai, why are they obligated to compensate? Pshia bebailim he. True, they were reckless, but he, the owner of the garment, at the time they were watching it, he was in service for them. He was baking for them. So the owner was working, so to speak, for them, the shomrim, and therefore there should be an exemption that we referred to before by the term bebailim. Ichsif, upon hearing that, Rav Papa became embarrassed. In other words, he ruled they have to pay, they have to compensate when it seems that they're actually exempt. L'saif igloi milsa, at the end, it was revealed, tahu shaita, at the time that they were reckless with the garment, this, the owner, had not been in their service. He hadn't started baking yet. Shichra hava kashasi, he was drinking beer, meaning he hadn't actually started baking for them. So that's not a case of bebailim. So Rav Papa's ruling is actually an accurate ruling. They were reckless before the owner was in their service. Ha nicha l'man domar pshia bebailim poter mishum ochi yichsif. This whole story will make sense according to the opinion that says pshia bebailim, that recklessness, I should say, even recklessness can result in exemption if you hold that the exemption of bebailim extends to the section of the Torah dealing with shomer chinam. Oh, and that's why Rav Papa had shown embarrassment. Elo lamanda marchayav amay yichsif, but according to the other school of thought that says that once you're dealing with pshia, there is no exemption of bebailim, why would Rav Papa have shown any expression of embarrassment? Well, according to this approach, that pshia bebailim in fact is chayav, he's obligated to compensate, such a shomer, even if the owner was in their service, in his service, the shomer that was reckless would have to compensate. How do we deal with this story? Ella, rather, second version, Hahu Yoma Lav Didei Hafu. The baker, amongst these, the fellow who was asked to bake, it wasn't his day for baking. He had fulfilled his, we'll say, his rotational obligation. However, the Omrule Ludide, they turned to this guy and said, you know, I know it's not your day, Zil Ofi Lonat, but bake for us anyway. Viamar Lahu, and he said to them, oh, you want me to provide you with a service? So Bahu Agro de Kafino Lahu Naturu Glimoi. In we'll say as payment for my baking for you, I want you to watch my garment. So now how are we to classify them on the scale of Shomrim? They're Shomrei Sochar. You know, they're agreeing to watch, and their pay is his begging for them. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ad de'asa ignif. By the time the owner came to recover his garment, the garment was stolen. And here it was stolen not as a result of pshia, but a straightforward case of theft. They were responsible in their watching, but things happened and it was stolen anyway. Also the kame de Rav Papa chayvinu. Rav Papa ruled, after the case came to him, he ruled that they have to compensate. Omru, they have to compensate. A shomer sochar is obligated for geneva, for theft. Omru le rabbanu le Rav Papa, hashmira b'baylam hi. Why are they obligated? Was he not baking for them when they started watching his garment? And if the owner was in their service through his baking on their behalf, they are exempt. Ichsif and Rav Papa became embarrassed. It then became revealed later that at the moment the item was stolen, the owner of the garment had not yet started the baking. He was not yet in their service because at that moment he was drinking beer. His baking started only later on. So therefore, at the time of the theft, the owner who was drinking beer was not in their service. So the exemption of the Bailim does not apply. Hano Beitre Davaka Masgu Ba'urcha. There were two people walking along on a journey, on a road. Chad Orech V'chad Gutza. One was a tall man and the other one short. Aricha, the tall man, Rochiv Chamra, Vehave Le Sadina. The tall man was riding on a donkey, and he happened to have an article of clothing called made of material that is referred to by the term Sadina, which we can call linen. Linen, Pishtan. Pishtan is a term that you see in Rashi. Flax. Linen, the raw material from which linens are made, from flax. Gutza, the short man, Michsi Sarvala, he was wearing a woolen garment. The Komaski Bakar, and he, the short man wearing the woolen garment, was walking on foot. Kimota Lanara, when they came to a river crossing, Shakle Lesarvale, the short man removed from himself the woolen garment. The woolen garment, wool is a highly absorbent material, and the woolen garment becoming water laden would become very heavy, and the crossing of the river would become not only difficult but possibly dangerous. So he, the short man before entering the water, removed his woolen garment, the oisve ilui chamra, and he put it on the donkey's back, the shakle lesedine dahu, and short man took the tall man's linen that was in the tall man's possession, the ifsibe, and he covered himself with it so that in crossing the river, the water, it wouldn't become heavy. Shatfua maya lesadine, and the river current washed away the sadin. So you have the short man who had borrowed the sadin from the tall man, but now it is a loss. Also lekame de Rava chayve. The case came to Rava, and Rava obligated him to compensate. Amru le rabbona le Rava. Amai, why does the short man have to compensate for the loss of the linen? She'ela bebailim he. Is it not a case of borrowing with the owner of the linen garment in his service, serving the short man? And how is that? At that moment that the at that moment that the sadin was washed away, the owner of that sadin, the owner of the linen, was carrying the woolen garment across the river. He was working in service of the short man. So Rava's ruling of chiyuv, of obligating short man to pay, no. He's, the short man is a borrower with the owner of the item borrowed in his, the short man's service. Ichsif. And Rava became embarrassed. He was embarrassed because what the Rabbonon said to Rava seemed to be right. At the end, it became revealed that the short man took the linen of the tall man without his knowledge, and that short man put the woolen garments on the back of the tall man's donkey also without his knowledge. So everything here was done without knowledge. It wasn't a case of we'll say, legitimate borrowing. The tall man was not in service with of the short man in any conscious state. He was unaware of it. Therefore, the whole section of Bebaylim, the exemption of Bebaylim, has no relevance in this case. On the side of the war, we have a topic heading. It's a very brief topic heading, but you'll appreciate it later in the Gemara. Migu b'mokum edim, namely anan sadi. Can one offer a claim, or advance a claim? But the migu is a type of claim that a person advances, which is designed for him to gain exemption on the grounds that, believe me when I say what I say, because I could have said something better that you certainly would have believed me. So believe me in what I'm saying now, because and that what I'm saying now is the truth, because what I could have said something else that would have been even more believable, and I would have been exempt. So believe me with what I'm saying now. However, in this particular Gemara, we'll see a claim, the claim that is advanced in actuality, happens to be a claim that could be repudiated by Edom. We speak about Edom, generally speaking, we translate Edom as witnesses. In this particular Gemara, the witnesses featured is really the collective of humanity. Anan Sadi, we bear witness that what you are saying right now is untenable. Okay, I know that sounds a bit abstract, but as far as introduction, I think that's sufficient. We now turn to the Gemara. Hahu Gavra de Oiger le Chamro le Chavre. There was a man that rented his donkey to his friend. Omale, the owner, says, Chazi, I want you to take note. These are the terms. Don't go the Nahar Pekoid route, because that route is muddy. There's a lot of water there. Maya, water. It's a watery route. That's not good for my donkey. Zil Burcha de Narish, the Leko Maya, go the Narish route. There is no water there. Azal Burcha de Narpakod, Umis Chamra. The renter went on the forbidden route, the Nahar Pakod route, and the animal, the donkey, died. He also, when the renter came, he said, in Burcha de Narpakod, Azal, yes, I went in the route that you told me not to go. However, there was no water there. Omarle Rava, Ma Le Lishakir. Why should we view him as telling a lie? E boy, Omarle, he could have said, the renter could have said, Anoba Urcha de Narish Azli. I went on the Narish route, the route that you told me to go on, and it died, and I'm a socher, I'm a renter, I'm not obligated in onus, in destruction beyond one's control. So Rava wants to rule that this renter is exempt based on we'll call it the power of Migu. True, I didn't listen to you. However, the problem that you raised, namely the water, didn't exist. So, therefore, the water was no threat. That's not what caused the animal to die. And believe me in my story, because I could have said something that you certainly would have accepted had I said that I went on the route that you prescribed. Omar lay Abaye. Abaye responds, Mali l'shakir b'mokam edim lo aminan. Claims that are based on believe me, because believe me in that I am not lying because I could have said something else. That kind of claim, if the initial claim, believe me in what I'm saying now, is contradicted by witnesses, so your claim falls away at the outset. True, you could have said something else, but what you're saying right now, objectively speaking, is a lie. In what sense? You're saying something that witnesses contradict. Who are the witnesses over here? Anan Sadi, we bear witness that the Harpa code, it's like saying, yeah, I went along the banks of the Mississippi, but there was no water in the river. Well, the Mississippi River doesn't dry up. So his claim that I went the Nahar Pakod, Nahar is literally a river, I went the Nahar Pakod route and there was no water, you're saying something that is preposterous. So since your initial claim is preposterous, you can't use it as a jumping off point that we should believe because of a better claim you could have made. We continue. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading. Shmor li, someone asks, watch an item for me, the Omar lo, and the listener says any one of several things. Hanoch lefonai, put it down in front of me. That would make him into a Shomer Chinam. That's what we saw in the Mishnah. Let's say the listener would say, Hanoch lefonecha, put it down in front of yourself. Number three, let's say the listener would say, Hanoch, stam, put it down, without the lefonai or lefonecha expression. Now the Gemara. As we saw in the Mishnah, Shmor li, the Omar lo, Hanoch lefonai, Shomer Chino. Someone asked an individual, watch this for me, and the response was, put it down in front of me. The Shomer is a Shomer Chino. Omar Ravuno, Omar lo Hanoch lefonecha. If the response was, put it down in front of yourself. Eino lo Shomer Chino velo Shomer Socher. He is not even a Shomer Chinam, and it goes without saying that he is not a Shomer Socher. In other words, there's no responsibility on the part of that listener who said, put it down in front of yourself. Ivailo, the question is raised, Hanoch Stamomai. Let us say the response was, put it down, without either Lifonai in front of me or Lifonecha in front of yourself. What would the din be? Toshma. So we try to conclude this question from drawing an inference from the Mishnah. What did it say in the Mishnah? Shmor li, the Omar lo Hanoch lefonai, put it down in front of me. Shomer chino. Ha stama. And you'll notice with our markings, we have a diamond highlighting the word ha here and a couple lines later. These are inferences. And the double underline highlights the word stamo, the case we are trying to clarify. So from the Mishnah, you could infer, if the response was simply hanoch, lo, that would be velo klum, he would be nothing. Namely, if he says, put it down in front of me, so the responder is interested in becoming a shomer chinam. But if he wouldn't add in front of me, simply say, put it down, he'd be nothing. No responsibility. Adarava, well, to the contrary. Mida Omar Rav Huna. From the fact that Rav Huna had his teaching that we just saw a couple lines above, where he said, Hanoch lefonecho, put it down in front of yourself. Lo shomer chino velo shomer socher. In that case, he is accepting no responsibility. We could infer, though, ha'astamo, if he would have said, put it down, simply Hanoch, shomer chinam have, he would have been a shomer chinam. Elo meho leko lemashmino, rather from inferences drawn either from the Mishnah or from Rav Huna, there is nothing to conclude. In other words, the Mishnah is taught in and of itself, not taught with the let's say self understood inference. Likewise, Rav Huna taught his din without intending for you to infer anything from it. So there's nothing to conclude from these citations. Leimo ketanoi, shall we say that the issue of Hanoch Stamo is a machlokes tanoim? The Gemara quotes a Tanaic source, but it's a bit abbreviated. Rashi gives you the background. And you can see this in the upper quarter of the Rashi commentary. Mishnahi, this is a quote from the Mishnah early, from Maseches Bava Kama, the Perek Shor Shenagach HaSapora, the Kador, Sheichnis Kedei Roisov, a Kador is a craftsman who manufactures pots, clay pots. He brought his wares into a courtyard, Vishibron Shoiroi Shabalabayas, and the animal, the ox of the homeowner, broke the pots. Ohichnis Shoro, Vinochal Shabalabayas, or he, the, we'll say the visitor, brought his animal in, and the animal of the homeowner wrought damage to the visiting animal. Or the visitor brought fruits in and the homeowner's animal ate them. Those are different cases that serve as background to what we pick up with in the Gemara now. Im hichnis birshus, if the enterer, the visitor entered with rishus, with permission, baal chotzer chayav, then the homeowner, the one who owns the courtyard, is responsible for the damage to the pots, the consumption of the fruits that were brought in. We have to add very important information, and this you can see in the Rashi, where Rashi comments on Baal Chotzer Chayov Benisko. The homeowner is obligated to compensate for the visitor's damage suffered by the visitor. The Chiyomar Le'il, when the homeowner says, come in, Oil v'anterloch komar. He says, come in and I'll watch your things. V'adin hanoch stamo b'shuk. And likewise, if someone says, put it down in an open place, in a marketplace, the same would apply. So as we read this Tanaic source, the Tanakama, in saying Baal Chotzer Chayev, is saying that hanoch is acceptance of obligation, acceptance of Shomer status. We continue in the Gemara. Rebbe Omer Bekulam Eino Chayov Ad Shiakabel Olav Baal Abayas Lishmor. In all of the examples we cited before, the homeowner will not bear responsibility unless he says explicitly, put it down and I will watch it. However, if he simply says, put it down, that does not incur any responsibility. So then the issue of put it down, or hanoch stam, is a machlokas tanoim. According to the Tanakama, it has meaning, it creates responsibility. By your saying put it down, you're saying put it down and I will watch it. According to Rebbe, by your saying put it down, you've said nothing. The Gemara now rejects this analysis, this paralleling. Notice we have a long marking. Mimai, who is to say, as we said, Dilma ad kan lo kami rabbonon hosam ela b'chotzer. Maybe the rabbonon said what they did only in the case of a courtyard, where simple permission, reshus sta, means come in or put it down, where that's only in the case of a chotzer, in a private enclosed area, where saying to someone, come in, is acceptance of responsibility. And why? The bas naturihi, it's a closed, guarded place. We'll say the guarding element, the security element is already present. The chikomer le'ayel, when you say to someone under those circumstances, namely of a chotzer, come in, ayel de inter loch komele, you're in effect saying, come and I will watch your thing. I will accept responsibility. Avol hocha, shuka lav bar neturi hu. The case of the shuk, the marketplace, that is not a guarded place. It's not a place of security. And therefore, when he says in a place like that, Hanoch, Anoch v'tiv natar loch komalei, put it down, you sit and you watch it. So as far as trying to extrapolate from what the Rabbonim say in the source quoted from Bava Kama to our case of Hanoch, put it down, there's simply lack of parallel. As we said, the chotzer is a private place to begin with. Therefore, when you say come in or put it down in a place like that, you are accepting additional responsibility. Not so in the case of an open, unsecure, insecure, open, unguarded area like the shuk. Inami. Likewise, we will show lack of parallel between our question and Rebbe's position. Ad kan lo koma Rebbe hasam ela b'chatsero de le yuli rishusa kaboy lemishkaminei. Rebbe said that there is no acceptance of responsibility by simply telling someone, come in. That is because in order to enter an enclosed private area, you need permission to simply enter. The chiyoyev le rishusa, and when permission was granted, Yuli, he was saying, you can come in. Tiv notar loch komale, come in, and you watch your own item. So that in the case of a chotzer, from Rebbe's standpoint, the instruction or the invitation of coming in, that did not entail acceptance of responsibility, because the mere ability to enter would have had to have been preceded by the granting of permission. And that's what come in meant. Avol hocha, in the case of an open market, when you tell someone, put it down, Hanoch v'ana mantarno komale. I didn't need any permission to put it down. Why then did you tell me put it down? By your saying put it down, you're really saying put it down and I will watch it, where he does accept responsibility. If you were to think put it down and you watch it, in order to put it down, reshusa boy the mishkamine, does the owner need permission to put it down? Obviously not. So any speech in the market scenario, if it is going to have any bearing, any actual meaning, it would have that meaning only if you understand the instruction of put it down to mean put it down and I will watch it. So as you can see, the attempt to create a machlokas tanoim of Tanakama holding that Hanoch is acceptance of responsibility and Rebbe holding Hanoch is not acceptance of responsibility, if you're going to work with that source, you can actually end up with drawing an opposite conclusion. So we don't draw any conclusions as far as the issue of Hanoch being necessarily a machlokes tanoim. Hilveo ala mashkon, we saw in the Mishnah, if a loan was granted and the lender received collateral, shemer socher, so the lender is considered a paid bailey regarding the mashkon. Before we go further, we glance at the side of the Gemara. We have an osei topic heading. Note, by the way, this is a very long topic, and it goes until pay beis omid beis. Hamava la mashkon, one who extended a loan in exchange for receiving collateral, eza din shmira al hamava. What category of shmira exists with regard to the malva, the lender who received the borrower's item as collateral? Under our structural note, we've written Hagemara mitchalekes lishnei halokim. The Gemara can be, we'll say, divided into two sections. Aleph nisayon lomar de mishnosenu eino kerebi Eliezer shem ofia bebraisa, the suggestion that our Mishnah cannot agree with, cannot be authored by Rebbe Eliezer, who will appear in a Tanaic source. B'daf pei beis omid aleph, Hagemara tenase lahasbir machloikis Reb Elozer Reb Akiva hamufiim kan bebraisa. The second section of Gemara will then be an attempt to explain the machlokes tanoim that appears in the Tanaic source that we're about to see, the machlokes between Reb Elozer and Reb Akiva. As far as markings are concerned, we have an inverted house shape that is the beginning of a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take structure of Gemara. The inverted house, Lemo Masnisa Deloke Reb Elozer, will be an attempt to show that our Mishnah is not like Reb Elozer. The house with the point facing upwards, Afilu Temo Masnisa Reb Elozer, you could say that our Mishnah, in fact, is authored by Reb Elozer. And then we will see an additional marking, Velo Kashya, which is highlighted with a triangle. Nisyonos Lamid Amishnah Reb Eliezer Liyashva in Reb Eliezer Debraisa. Attempts to set up our Mishnah like Rebbe Eliezer and resolve that with Reb Eliezer in the Braisa. We now turn to the Gemara. We start with a long question. You can see we have a long question marking on the side of the Gemara text. Lemo masnisin the loker blazer. Our Mishnah said that the lender has a shomer socher status with regard to the collateral that he received. So at first glance, it appears that our Mishnah is not like Rebbe Eliezer, who appears in this source. Desanya hamalve es chaveru al hamashkoin. A loan was extended, and the lender received a mashkon. The Ovad Hamashkon, Ovad, it was lost. Yeshava, the lender swears that he was not Poshea, that he was not reckless. And Vito Moisov, Divrei Blezer, and he can claim payment of the loan. Ah, there's no Mashkon here. All right. The loss of the Mashkon is not something we would hold the lender responsible for, because he's a shomer, viewed as a shomer chinam on it. Right away, we have said something that is not like our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that the lender has a shomer sochar status, a paid bailey status, and a paid bailey, a shomer sochar, is chayav for geneva and aveda, and loss. Here we see, as far as the loss is concerned, exemption. And as a result, the lender bears no responsibility for the mashkon in this case, and he can claim the loan that he had lent to be paid up. Rabbi Akiva Oimer, Yachol lo marlo. Rabbi Akiva says the lender, the borrower, the borrower who owned the mashkon, who owned the collateral, can say, klum hilvisani elo al hamashkon. Is it not so that you loaned me because you were going to get from me the mashkon, the collateral? Well, of the mashkon, of the mosecha. You lost the mashkon. You lose your money. I'm not paying you. That is what Rabbi Akiva says. The borrower can say to the lender. Aval hilveu elav zuz b'shtar v'niach lo mashkon aleihem. If a loan was written up in a document, it was recorded in a shtar, and was a loan for 1,000 zuz recorded in a shtar, and the borrower presented collateral. Divrei HaKol, everyone will agree, even Rabbi Lezer will agree. Avad Hamashkon Avdu Moisov. In that case, if the mashkon is lost, then the lender loses his chance of collecting his moisov, his money. So at this point, our Mishnah said the lender has a shomer socher status. Rabbi Lezer seemed to say that the lender has a shomer chinom status. Our Mishnah then would appear to be unlike Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara responds, Afilu Tamer Rabbi Eliezer, our Mishnah can coincide with Rabbi Eliezer. Well then, what about this seeming discrepancy? For lo kashya, there's no discrepancy between the Mishnah and this Brisa source. Kan shemishkana b'shas havasoi, kan shemishkana shelo b'shas havasoi. It all depends at what point the mashkon, the collateral, entered the picture. Rabbi Lezer, the Brisa that says that the lender is a shemer chinam, that's with reference to a mashkon that was transferred at the time of the loan. In other words, at the initial stages of the loan, the mashkon was given, so that the lender gave money to the borrower, and the borrower gave an item of his as collateral to the lender. The Mishnah, however, which indicated that the lender is a shomer socher, kan shemishkenei shelo b'shas havaso. That's the Mishnah is talking about a different scenario. It's a case where the collateral was received later on, not at the time of the initial extension providing of the loan, but later on when it appeared that the borrower was not going to pay up. So the court sends an agent to the borrower's house who extracts from the borrower an item and presents it to the lender. Before going any further, we take a look at the Rashi. The first Rashi that we'll look at addresses the issue we just mentioned in the Gemara. Kan shemishkenei b'shas havaso koma Rabbi Lezer shomer chinam. Rabbi Lezer and the Braisa that said that the lender has a shomer chinam status is where the mashkon was presented initially at the time of the loan. Umasnisen kishemishkenei shelo b'shas havaso elo liachar zman kishetavu ma'oisov v'beisin v'lo shileim. Lender having a shomer socher status is dealing with a mashkon that was collected by the lender only after he saw that the cash was not being paid up. So the court agent takes from the borrower an item. Umishkanu al pi basin dahu vadai leguvaino shakli. A mashkon in that case is clearly being taken as a means of collecting the loan, as a means of payment of the loan. What Rashi mentioned here, we did not mention earlier in our explanation. So we take a look now at Rashi just before. Avol hilveu elav zuz b'shtar v'niach lo mashkon alem divrei kol avdei ma'osav. We saw in our Tanaic source a loan that was recorded in a document, and even though there's hard evidence of the loan by virtue of the contract the loan document. Nevertheless, the lender received a mashkon. So we continue reading in the Rashi. V'niachlo mashkon aleim divrei hakol avdu ma'asav. There, everyone will agree that if the mashkon is lost, the lender will lose his money, will not get paid. The whole mashkon, this mashkon, v'arei l'guvai neshakal l'gvos heimena. It was definitely received by the lender as a source or means of collecting the debt. The stam shtar yesh bo shibud karkois. Your basic contract has contained within it the, we'll say, the lien or power of a lien against the borrower's properties. V'yesh lo mehechon l'gvos. He has from where to collect. Namely, the lender has from where to collect once the loan is recorded in a shtar, ubatuachu, and he also has confidence that he'll get his money paid. V'gam lichpar eino yochol, and as far as his denying having received a loan, he won't be able to. Daha koi shtar, there's a shtar, there's a contract indicating he borrowed money. So in a case like that, the mashgon hilkach lav lezichron dvarim nakde. It wasn't something that he took, that the lender took simply as a reminder of the loan. So as Rashi had discussed earlier, namely a mashkon that is held on only as a mere reminder of the loan having been extended, the lender, in a case like that, would be a mere shomer chinam. However, where a mashkon is received by the lender as an alternative means of collecting, in order otherwise he doesn't have a sense of security of getting his money back, that kind of mashkon will, let's say, upgrade the lender to becoming a shomer sochar. So by saying that the Mishnah and this Brisa represent two different circumstances, we can say that our Mishnah could be authored by Rebbe Eliezer. However, the Gemara is not satisfied. The Gemara asks, V'ha idi v'idi. Is it not so that both cases, we continue at the top of the Pei Beis, Hilveu al hamashkoin kotoni, both in the Mishnah and in the Brisa, you see the expression Hilveu al hamashkoin. The loan was extended in exchange for a mashkon. What does that indicate? That indicates that at the initial extending of the loan, a mashkon was already being presented. So that the Gemara's attempt to resolve by saying that the Mishnah and the Brisa are two different circumstances, that's not true. Ela lo kashya. But still, you can see another triangle. These are another attempt to resolve the Mishnah with Rebbe Eliezer. There's no problem. Kan shilveu mois, kan shilveu perois. The Brisa, which classifies the lender as a shomer chinam, according to Rebbe Eliezer, that's because the loan was a loan of cash. The Mishnah that classifies the lender as a shomer sochar, that's because fruits were loaned. Peros were loaned. You might ask then, well, if peros were loaned, then how does that upgrade the level of shmira on the part of the shomer sochar, on the part of the lender? Where is the lender who's loaning fruits, where is he getting paid, so to speak? So, if you look back at Rashi on Daf Pei Omid Beis, and the note that we included in our marked Gemaras, we pointed out that if a person has fruits that he say is willing to lend, let's assume then that these are fruits that he wasn't going to eat now. They're fruits that would have sat around in his house. They may very well have rotted in the course of time. He now finds someone that wants to borrow those fruits, that wants to receive those fruits, who's willing to pay fruits later on in return. When the fruits are paid back, the lender is actually going to be receiving fresh produce. Whereas if he would have held on to his own fruits and not loaned them, they might have rotted away. He actually benefits by having had this opportunity to lend the fruits. That is the benefit the lender receives, thereby classifying him as a shomer sochar. But we're not getting involved here with the dinim of ribis, we call saw besaw, etc. and so forth. But for our purposes, it's important to recognize that the payback that the lender of fruits gets, since the initial item lent were fruits that would have gone bad, and when payback is made, he's obviously getting back something of value, not rotten fruits. That's his benefit, and hence he becomes a shomer socher. The Gemara asks, "Vaha mi de katani seifa? Rabbi Yehuda omer hilveu moi shomer chinam hilveu perei shomer socher." The Mishnah itself presents an opinion, namely the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who makes that distinction between mois and peros. Michlal de latana kamo lo shani le. So it must be that the first opinion in the Mishnah doesn't make that distinction. So how can you say that the Tanakama is speaking about only one kind of loan? The first opinion in the Mishnah is referring only to one kind of loan, when the only one who makes that distinction is Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah. The Gemara responds, Kula Rabbi Yehuda hi v'chisuri mechaser v'achitoni. Our Mishnah is in fact entirely Rabbi Yehuda. It's not as if there are two different opinions, and the Mishnah is deliberately abbreviated, and the following is the way to really understand the Mishnah. Hilveu al hamashkon shomer sochar. A lender who receives collateral is called a shomer socher. B'amedvamamurim, and when is that? Shilveu peros, if what he loaned were fruits. Avahilveu mois, if the loan was a loan of cash. Shomer chinam, then the lender is a shomer chinam. Sherebi Yehuda omer hilveu mois shomer chinam hilveu peros shomer socher. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer, who classified the Malva Lamashkon as a Shomer Chinam, could very well be speaking about a loan of cash, and that conforms to our Mishnah. Well, I hachi kama lo masnisin delok Rabbi Kiva. If you're going to say that our Mishnah could be authored by Rabbi Eliezer, well, Rabbi Eliezer, we saw in the Brisa at the bottom of Pei Aleph and Beis, was contested or argued on by Rabbi Akiva. So if you're going to say that our Mishnah is like Rabbi Eliezer, so then our Mishnah is then not like Rabbi Akiva. And being that our Mishnah, which speaks about Amava Lamashkoin, is a Shomer Sochar, is a Stam Mishnah, that puts us in a, we'll call it an uncomfortable position. And Rashi gives more background to that, but by having a Stam Mishnah, it would be most likely to have been authored by Rabbi Akiva, not by Rabbi Eliezer. Ela machvarto masnisa, the local Rabbi Eliezer. Rather, it would appear more likely to say that our Mishnah, in fact, is not like Rabbi Eliezer, thereby leaving room for us to set up the Mishnah as being authored by Rabbi Akiva. And in reality, our Mishnah said that Amava Amashkoin is a Shomer Socher, and Rabbi Kiva held the lender responsible for the Aveda, for the loss Ovad Hamashkon, he said in the Brisa, Ovad Avdu Moisecha. Mimris Hashem, in the next section of Gemara, there will be a further analysis in establishing under what circumstances Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing. We pointed this out earlier in our introductory remarks to this section of Gemara, where we indicated that the sugya that in the midst of which we find ourselves continues to daf pei beis amid beis. At this point in the Gemara, we go to what we called earlier the second section, where we try to explain what is the basis or what's the nature of this machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. At this point, before we conclude, though, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.